it's incredible for their mental health. It's going to bring creativity. It's going to make them a more rounded person, but it's actually going to help their immune systems. So let them get dirty.
Let them get dirty.
Welcome back to This Little Life, an impromptu and lively discussion diving into the big and little issues of parenting and beyond. Well, us parents tend to worry a lot, from sleep to sunscreen to screen time. The list is endless as we try to raise our well-adjusted humans. One of our biggest concerns, of course, is what our children eat. We want them to limit their intake of things like added sugar and preservatives, and this is certainly not a new trend, but trying to stay on top of it all certainly can be overwhelming. But does it need to be this way? Do we need to accept it, or can we change it? Well, Nikki Skinner, our guest today, has a theory on that. As a mum of two, a pediatric registered nurse, and an accredited nutrition lifestyle coach, her passion is educating people about the benefits of a low-tox lifestyle. But what does this actually mean, and what does it actually look like, and more importantly, is it actually achievable for busy mums and dads? Join us today as we get the lowdown on a low-tox lifestyle. So Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited about this conversation and super excited by your credentials as well. I understand you're a nurse at one of New Zealand's busiest hospitals. How was that in terms of getting a lay of the land around children and health and human beings?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to talk today. That was one of my hats. I absolutely adored working, you know, particularly with children as a pediatric emergency nurse. You obviously see a lot. And as you can imagine, with working with children, a lot of what you are doing as a nurse is actually working with the parents. So a lot of the time, you know, we're working with the play therapists to make the child's experience a positive one so that there's no kind of damaging, ongoing negative anxiety around a hospital experience. But a lot of the work is working with the parents, working with their anxieties and just education, making sure they know exactly what's going on for their child, because that's obviously really important.
What was the decision around moving from nursing to a more holistic approach to health and well-being?
Yeah, so for me, the transition, it was a slow one, and it was kind of, out of my own research, my own desire to dive deeper with things. It started actually when I was working primarily with adults. Working in the adult ED, I was seeing a lot of chronic disease come through those doors, and nothing in that what we were doing in the medical model in the emergency situation is really about dealing with the root cause of disease. Most of my patients were on upwards of 10, 20 different medications for things. And I just became a bit cynical of the whole approach. And so my alignment just was out. I didn't get burnt out as such, but I guess, you know, we can't ignore that shift work is not good for the human body. Mm-hmm. 12-hour shift, working night shifts, all of those kinds of things. You know, when it comes back to what we're doing with the healthcare system, it's not working. We are getting sicker as a global society. You know, sperm counts are decreasing, fertility rates are decreasing. Our kids are getting sicker. Like, mm-hmm. there is so much more illness in our kids, from autoimmune to, you know, even just asthma, eczema, you know, allergies, and the chronic disease burden. Like, it's, we need to be looking at lifestyle, what we're doing, and how we're nourishing ourselves to actually really get some really good results in our global health.
I couldn't agree more. I was actually listening to another podcast just the other day, one of my favorites, actually. It was all about a gentleman who had a similar journey to you, obviously was a doctor and gone through the medical training where, you know, you treat the symptoms and don't really worry about the cause of it and, you know, flood people with more medicines. You know, his journey then brought him to the point where he was doing a fabulous and interesting study around twins and how twins, genetically basically the same, or identical twins, should I say, the same, but how one would die before the other. It was at that point he sort of realized that it all came down to the gut biome. So he was trying to say everything you've learned about eating up to, you know, we went through the 80s with a, you know, supermodel kind of restrict all your calories to your kind of the 90s where it was no fat, no sugar, no all the processed foods to now. And he was saying all you need to worry about is the foods that actually promote good gut health. So unprocessed food, low tox food, the low tox life. So this is sort of this significantly growing kind of conversation around redressing all of the existing eating, you know, thoughts and things that we've been learnt in the past. I mean, is that presumably that's along the same premises that you support as well in terms of resetting health and wellness in adults and children alike.
100%. And I think, like, the research, as you said, it just keeps coming out, confirming to us the importance of the microbiome being really the seat of so many different systems, particularly our immune system. So yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating. He was talking about, you know, the fact that this whole calorie counting thing, which is what I grew up on, my mother banging it into me about, you know, making sure you keep under 1600 calories or whatever it was. But he was saying that that needs to be totally reset in terms of instead focusing, like I said, on the, you know, the good foods you eat. Because from an adult perspective, a lot of us are obviously always trying to lose weight no matter how we look at the world. But he was saying that depending on if you get your more positive gut biome, that will actually help you stay slimmer, and that internal fat will kind of, you have the ability to break that down, which I thought was really interesting because we also know with children, the rate of obesity within children is also on the increase. So how is it, I mean, that sort of discussion that, you know, I heard yesterday versus, you know, sort of what you're promoting from a low tox lifestyle for children and families, what's your best overview of a low detox approach in life works?
Yeah, so a low tox life, it's a mindset, right? So it's choosing to be informed, make choices to reduce the number of chemicals that you're bringing into your home. Okay, so from, you know, what you're using on your skin, your body, what you're breathing in the air, what you're drinking in your water, you know, what you're cooking with, all of those kinds of things. And it's important for, you know, a number of reasons that I already just talked about, but our body is amazing at detoxification, right? So we have organs that do a fabulous job, but the environmental toxic load that we put on our bodies in our modern day society, it's having an effect on those detoxification organs, right? So if we can lift some of that burden, all of our body systems are going to work better, right? So really, really important, because like more and more research is coming out every single day about the effects of these chemicals, such as your phthalates and your synthetic perfume, your PFAS and cookware. I'm sure you've seen that research, lots of other things. And it's having an effect on our fertility, on our livers, on our kidneys, on our brains. A lot of them are possible carcinogens. So it's really, really important, particularly for our kids. We want to set them up well in those early years. And we want to make sure that they are going to have not just like a beautiful flourishing microbiome, but really great fertility for later life.
So what are some of the benefits that you have seen in terms of your own life since going low tox?
Yeah, so I guess for me, I didn't necessarily start out with any huge kind of health issues to begin with, like a lot of my community do when they come to this lifestyle. So a lot of them are struggling with, you know, particular health issues. I didn't have any of that. So one of the biggest things that I found was money saving. And I'm sure you can agree, today's kind of climate, it's something that we all want help with. So I think, you know, learning how to make my own cleaning products, for example, was a big win for the family budget. Mm-hmm. But also things like much clearer skin from non-irritating cosmetics, less illness as well from, you know, supporting my detoxification pathways, supporting my immune system, those kinds of things I definitely noticed as well.
And what about with the kids? I mean, because you've got two. How I didn't ask how old they were.
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Okay, right. Well, you're in the thick of it. So, I mean, how have you seen any benefit to their little world after obviously adopting more of these low tox approaches?
Yeah. So, because this is all I've known, I don't have a baseline.
Yes, right.
My low tox journey started when I was pregnant. And I think this is something that a lot of people are looking into, particularly, you know, the people that you're talking to are looking for something better to feed their babies. So possibly they're pregnant, you know, and this is just one part of, it's just an awareness. Suddenly you're growing this fetus inside you and it's no longer just about you. And so that was my kind of impetus to dive into this and to really do the research around it, to learn how what I was putting on my body and what I was using to clean up my home was potentially impacting what I was growing inside me. I don't have a night and day story, but a lot of people in my community do. And I think one of the biggest things will be just hearing about less frequent illnesses, but when they do get unwell, which is going to happen, recovering faster, yeah, more resilient children, basically.
So that's really interesting because, you know, obviously if you think about your previous life in a hospital, that's probably got to be one of the most highly chemically kind of
toxic.
I mean, I happened to be in the hospital just with one of my children 2 weeks ago, and you know the smell of chlorine and you know the bleach and everything, which you expect in a hospital, but working night and day, I presume has some effect. And because the interesting thing is, you're right, as parents, we do give some thought to, you know, those environmental toxins, of course. Like, I'm conscious of not spraying too much fly spray around the children, or, you know, so focused on food, but you really do underestimate the other things. I mean, because I don't even give any thought around pulling out the old Windex and spraying that around, or the old, you know, the old bam, bang, 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 you know. Yeah. I think I even, you know, in the few minutes we were talking, kind of thinking, gosh, I had really no idea that it had that much of an impact.
Yeah. And I think it is exciting that more and more, it is becoming more public knowledge that, you know, we can choose better and that it is affecting our kids. Like, the relationship to asthma in children is fairly established with maternal use whilst pregnant of cleaning products. So I think it's not to blame anyone. It's just this knowledge needs to get out there, and people need to know that we can choose better.
So when, like, with kind of confidence can sort of chart the food journey in terms of where we started on all the processed foods and, you know, back generations, and where we're kind of going full circle now back to more simple, wholesome, you know, unprocessed foods. When did this whole world of chemical cleaning products and chemical world really start? And what's that journey? And where are we now, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's very similar to the food, that I don't actually think the last 2 to 3 years has helped a lot with COVID. Being told that we need to be, you know, mm-hmm. over sanitizing everything. And what the research is showing us, and what it has, you know, told us already, is that families who do not over sanitize, so use cleaning products, but that are not using your heavily antibacterial hand sanitizers and cleaning every surface immaculately, their children have a much more diverse microbiome. They have better immune systems because they're dealing with more threats on their immune system that they are overcoming. Mm-hmm. So there's some pretty famous research around children who live in farm areas and children who have pets in their homes having lower incidences of allergies and having better immune responses purely based on, you know, having these environmental things to be able to deal with and stress the immune system to build up that. So my advice is ditch the 100% antibacterial hand sanitizers. It's not doing you any justice.
We've always talked about it, Little Oak, about, you know, getting back, letting kids jump in puddles and climbing trees and letting get dirty and things like that. But not from a sense of, like, necessarily looking from their overall ability to live a better life, just the go out and be a kid and get messy and, you know, have that good playtime. But there's so many more benefits.
It's incredible for their mental health. It's going to bring creativity. It's going to make them a more rounded person, but it's actually going to help their immune systems. So let them get dirty.
Let them get dirty. The other thing that concerns me, just thinking through my kids and all the crazy crap that they buy from all these stores, you know, the foam cleansers, and they, you know, all these companies now are making it more attractive for little kids, plus, you know, tweens like Olive, to want to buy all this stuff. You know, there's this, you know, new brand out there now where all the young tweens are, and they're buying the washing body soaps in a mousse format. And even I go, oh, that's a bit fun, isn't it? I'd buy that. I mean, that can't be good, can it?
Nah, it's not. And I think, particularly for our teens. So it's just about equipping yourself with the knowledge around this kind of stuff and being able to, you know, talk to them about what it's doing to their bodies, particularly, you know, around endocrine disruptors and synthetic fragrance and all those kinds of things. It definitely starts with parents, because they're not interested in learning all this kind of stuff. They just want to smell pretty. And it comes back to a lot of the little girls want to wear their beautiful play makeup and all of those kinds of things. It's not ideal.
So just selfishly taking a turn just on being an adult and makeup that we put on, because obviously it's a fairly well-established ritual for most women to whack on a whole pile of makeup every day. Is that a bad thing? Because if you're going to tell me I'm going to have to go naked faced, there's a whole lot of counselling I'm going to have to go through.
Yeah, no. So you can choose better.
Okay.
So I have a clean beauty guide on my Instagram account. If you want to go and have a look, there is a lot of greenwashing in the kind of market today. And what that basically means is where a company will use a particular language, a particular color on a bottle, or, you know, terminology to convince you that it's better than it is. So you definitely want to read ingredients, but there are some brilliant, brilliant Australian and New Zealand brands out there doing some really clean beauty, which is awesome, because we shouldn't have to sacrifice our endocrine health just to put some foundation on and make ourselves feel feminine. So there's definitely, definitely better brands to be using. And that beautiful. Like, you do not have to compromise on the quality of what you're using. And for me, I actually feel like I love using beautiful, clean beauty brands. They're definitely on par price-wise with, you know, whatever big kind of brand you may be using. So yeah, there's definitely great choices out there, because the demand is more. It's people are starting to learn about this stuff and they're demanding cleaner products.
Yeah.
So it's all going in the right direction.
I suppose that brings me back to the point around, I suppose we have to kind of be realistic around this as much as we are with eating with our kids. And I know that you've said before that, you know, if a, obviously low tox is try and do the best you can, but if a child has an artificial coloring in their food on occasion, it's not the worst thing in the world. Presumably is a little bit different for most people. I suppose it's all or nothing, you know, in this pursuit perfect being the enemy of good.
Yeah.
But, you know, what is your, I mean, your approach is a little bit different, isn't it? It's a little bit, probably a little more pragmatic than others 100%. Who are probably in this space.
I think I'm really glad that you touched on this, because I think this is one of the biggest pieces for people. And it's one of the biggest things that holds people back from even going anywhere with this. And I think they feel like, exactly what you said, they either need to do everything at once or they have to do everything perfectly. But this could like not be further from the truth. I think anything you do to lower the toxic burden in your home is good. Everything deserves to be celebrated, whether that is you swapping out your kitchen spray, whether that is making the swap to from like a non-stick fry pan to a beautiful cast iron pan. It's all going to add up. And my philosophy is switch when you run out. Right. So it makes it way more economical and way less overwhelming. I think the thing is, it's about cumulative toxic load. So if you've made changes in a lot of different areas, you can afford some freedom. So, for example, I love to get my hair dyed and I'm in desperate need of it right now. And I go to a beautiful holistic salon that uses, you know, ammonia free organic solutions, but it's still a whole lot of chemicals. Right. So I have reduced so many other areas in my life that I'm completely okay with that. So I think it's, you know, it's the same with food coloring in kids. Like, I do not stress the occasional slice of blue Elsa birthday cake, because I know that my children's bodies can handle it, because the vast majority of their diet is beautiful, colorful, nutrient-dense food.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I'm only just thinking through my whole life. I'm thinking, my gosh, that there's so many probably areas that I could improve. So actually on that, just to manage my rising levels of anxiety at the moment, what? I'm like, oh my God, I never really get it. I'm thinking, do I have to get rid of my fabric softener, the really lovely smelling one that leaves my clothes smelling gorgeous? And I go, on my towels every morning. Imagine you're kind of walking into somebody's house or your house. You know, how do you, what's your advice? Like, what's your advice to parents or adults or anyone that, and children as well? Because there's a lady at Freddie's Rugby who was saying the other day, I've got a website and the kids have, I encourage them to go onto the app. Every time they go on to eat something or use something, she goes, I encourage them to go onto the app to look at what each of the ingredients are. And her kids are like 9 and 8 and 7. I'm like,
wow.
Oh my God, I never even thought about this. But tell me, so if you and I were walking into the house together, what would you recommend I look at? What kind of ingredients am I looking for? What are the watch outs? Yeah. How would you take me through this journey?
Yeah. So I guess one of the kind of first things that I would say for like a kind of a home audit would be looking at replacing any kind of synthetic fragrance that you have in the home. So, you know, things like candles, any kind of plugins like air fresheners, spray air fresheners, all of that is not great. So being able to replace, you know, those kinds of things with a beautiful diffuser and some, you know, natural essential oils is going to be a game changer.
Ah, okay. So diffusers over a candle.
100%. And they're going to last you way longer. They're way more economical.
Well, that's going to save me a lot of money immediately, to your point around, because I spend a crap ton of money on candles. I love them. I love having the smell.
Yep. And people love, you know, the ambience as well. But I think, you know, with a candle, like a good candle, $40 or $50, they might have a burn time of maybe 12, 15 hours if you're lucky. But with a diffuser, like in a bottle of essential oil, you've got 250 drops of oil. You might use, you know, 3 drops in a diffuser in a bedroom, and you're going to get hours and hours and hours of use, and you're not messing with your hormones. I feel like that's an easy, easy peasy swap.
Yeah, immediate win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, like in terms of, you know, what you're looking for on packaging, whether it's, you know, food or ingredients, I think we're going to cover some of that soon. As I said, lots of greenwashing happening in the market around household products and things like that. And so it's really important to learn how to, I guess, read an ingredient label. There's lots of apps talking about getting the children to use apps, which I think is brilliant. But for adults, there's apps that you can even just scan a product and it will bring up things. And then you can actually look at that thing and think, you know, for my family, does that matter? Because different people are going to have different levels of what concerns them. And that's okay. And it may be that that changes over the, you know, the journey, because it is a journey. And you're always learning, you know, new things. But I think fragrance is a really easy one to look at and address because of, I guess, the immediate kind of things that can happen with synthetic fragrance, particularly for our little girls.
So in terms of then the, you know, the sprays and things that you kind of cook and then you get your, like I said, the BAM or the spray and wipe, you know, what, I mean, how do you replace that? What's the easiest thing to do that? Is that the vinegar? Or I remember, you know, you do see some of these things on Instagram, don't you? But I was like, well, that always seems a bit difficult, actually.
I hate
or does it work?
I detest the smell.
So do
so I.
I
don't. You can, you know, buy like a clean pre-made product. You just need to learn how to, you know, look at what is actually greenwashed and not, right? Uh-huh. You know, there's often better choices at the supermarket. EcoStore is a good one, kind of the best of the supermarket version. And then, you know, you can make your own. And this is obviously where the money saving comes in. You can buy a clean Castile soap, which is pretty prevalent where you are. There's a company called Dr. Planet who do a brilliant liquid castile soap, and that's kind of the cleaning agent for your spray. And then you can just add some essential oils that are going to have that antimicrobial properties to actually do the killing, because it's all very well like not having any toxins in your cleaning products, but you want it to work, right? You actually want it to kill the stuff that's on your bench.
Yeah.
So being able to use those is really effective.
And they would, what would they be?
So some kind of more known essential oils that have really beautiful antibacterial properties would be things like your tea tree, eucalyptus. I sell a beautiful oil called On Guard, which has a powerhouse antibacterial oils in there, which I love to use. Smells like Christmas in a bottle. But even things like lemon, like your citrus oils, still going to be really, really effective at killing bacteria on surfaces. Yeah.
Huh. Who knew?
There you go.
The old humble lemon has another good reason to buy a whole pile of them. And that's good because I tend to buy them every shop and then they just accumulate in the bottom of my fridge. And I think, oh, what will I do with all these? And I go rotten, I throw them out again. So I really, and now I've got a good option. So in terms of then, and I just want to talk on this because then we'll go on to move on to food, which is my, obviously the biggest area of interest for me personally. But from a greenwashing point of view, because one of the things, you know, from a food perspective, you can tell, it's more obvious, right? Because it's right and wrong. Anything that's not processed or in a packet or something is good for you. Anything that's in a packet is probably not the best. But if it's in a packet, there's definitely a variation from bad, good to better to best. But when you're talking this clean, you know, the household cleaning ingredients and fragrances and stuff, you know, you spoke a number of times about the greenwashing paint. I mean, the ingredient stuff as well. I mean, how do you make a decision? Like if you're a time poor mum or dad or something, and I know there's apps that can make the world an easier space for you, but how do we overcome this greenwashing, or how do we know who's greenwashing and who's not? Because, you know, even with food, sometimes it looks better than the rest, but there might be one ingredient that you've overlooked and it's actually quite crap because of that one ingredient. So how do we navigate that kind of in this space?
I guess, I mean, apps can help, but as you said, like a time poor mum, like, for me, when I was kind of starting this journey, I found a community of people who I trusted what they were saying and trusted their recommendations. And I kind of went with that until I had the knowledge that I now have myself to be able to do it myself. So I guess, yeah, I think that kind of takes a little bit of overwhelm. If you find somebody who is, you know, knowledgeable, you know, listen to their recommendations, particularly, you know, if they're in your area, that could be really helpful. But I guess there are apps that you can download. One that I like is called Chemical Maze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty inexpensive. I think it's maybe $12. And that's a really brilliant one. So if there is a chemical that you don't recognize on that bottle, you can type it in. It's going to give you kind of a rating system of like red, orange, green. And then again, you can decide for yourself if that's something that you're prepared to kind of use in your home. Greenwashing is prolific and nobody's regulating it. So it definitely, because something looks earthy and green, does not necessarily mean it is.
This is what makes it interesting in this particular space and category, because, you know, food in itself uses lots of chemicals and, you know, processing to get the cost savings because they get, you know, longer shelf life and what have you. But in this space where you're, you know, the cost of making a more natural kind of alternative, which you're talking to with essential oils and things, is actually really quite easy for these big manufacturers to do. Can't help but wonder why they're not doing it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it is. It is tough. I guess, you know, when you are using a whole lot of the chemicals that are less ideal for the body, exactly what you said, it's about preserving, you know, whatever the formula they're using, but it's also about giving people what they want. So whether it is a really like bleached kind of smell, or with the likes of, you know, laundry detergents and things like that, people just want the beautiful smells and the fragrances. And I guess, you know, as you are looking at lowering the toxic load, you have to be okay with maybe your clothes, like you were saying about the fabric softener, like, you know, giving that up like for a period of time and being like, can I do this? Because for a lot of people, that aroma and that sense of this is clean, this is lovely, is about the fragrance and less about actually how clean the thing is.
Yes.
So it's really interesting. It's really interesting how these manufacturers kind of trick to our senses of what we consider to be clean.
Well, I used to live in Singapore, and you know, over there, the smell, that olfactory kind of sense, the smell, they literally in hotels create their own, and this is worldwide, not just Singapore, but
yeah,
you know, they create their own scents and perfumes that when you walk in, they literally waft it all over you.
Wow.
Do you know, whether you like it or whether you don't, you know, and some of them are lovely and you actually want to go back, and then others you're like, I can't bear to go back to that hotel. It was disgusting. But I mean, that's kind of, given what you're just discussing here, kind of quite frightening, really, if you're spending a lot of time in all these, you know, countries, which brings me to my next question, whether you have an answer to it or not, it'd be interesting. But, you know, countries, I mean, are there different countries where, you know, they naturally would live a lower tox life or environment versus a higher tox? Because, you know, that's what the Singapore thought came from, that is a very high tox, I would have thought, country. And I'm interested to see, you know, is there a correlation between those high low kind of tox countries versus, you know, different, the incidence of different diseases and what have you, or fertility that you were referencing earlier?
I definitely think yes. And it comes back to not just the lower tox life, but, you know, what are they doing in their daily lives that are leading to longevity and happiness? And, you know, all of these, so a lot of Scandinavian countries have, you know, very robust kind of low chronic disease. And that comes back to, you know, the food they're eating, the way that they're moving their bodies, their ability to feel a purpose in their life and have community, meaningful, you know, relationships, all of those kinds of things, you know, lower stress levels, all of those things that kind of help us to live longer. And yeah, it's just a spiral around that. So I guess, you know, in Western countries, you know, particularly like us over here, America, obviously, with the, you know, the amount of technology that we have and big industries, we have a lot of toxic burden in our homes and in our lives. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of sad thing. I'm from a tiny country town, you know, where we always used to sit and think, God, I want to go live in the big city, you know, and like and now I think we probably should just stayed on that farm and we'd be better for it. But, so listen, I suppose that then brings me on to the, you know, the other piece of the pie and the puzzle, if you like, which is obviously food, which is obviously very close to my heart. And, you know, we're a big proponent here at Little Oak around, you know, reducing any unnecessary kind of ingredients or whatever ingredients we use, they've got to be in the whole form where we can, and reduce the heat and maximize all that natural goodness. So what's your take on the world in terms of nutrition for your family?
Yeah. So I guess for us, it would look like kind of trying to incorporate foods, like you said, in their more whole form. So incorporating, you know, grains, beans, like your rice, your quinoa, your oats, instead of an overabundance of, say, the flours and, you know, the processed pastas and things like that. And don't get me wrong, my kids love bread and pasta. But I try and pick those pastas that are less refined. So like your Pulse pasta or your Ceres Organics do a beautiful rice quinoa pasta that have those higher protein, you know, contents when they do eat that. So I guess for me, it's about, you know, offering real fruit first versus fruit juice, or, you know, so they're getting that fiber, about, you know, making muffins from scratch instead of a packet of biscuits for afternoon tea, making like buckwheat flour, you know, banana pancakes for breakfast instead of your rices or your cornflakes, that kind of thing.
What's funny, isn't it? Because even though I live and breathe this world around children's nutrition every day, you know, a bit like a cleaner, I clean, you know, clean everyone else's house, and you come back to your own house and it's a terrible mess.
Yeah.
So I actually took, following a chat with a similar health expert like yourself, opened my cupboard, pantry the other week and opened it up and looked inside, and actually, you know, all the little crappy cereal treats that I'd get them on the holidays, you know, just, you know, can have it once type thing. I'd sort of seen that they kind of started to accumulate as this kind of regular fixture in my pantry. So the other day I literally went out and just pulled everything out and threw it in the bin. That was, you know, felt terrible, this wasted money. But I was like, I actually, you know, the more you get to know, the more you get reminded of the stuff, even though you talk about it day in and day out, but applying to your life, I was like, look how much rubbish. I actually took a picture of it just to satisfy myself, so I could show my children to explain to them why I was throwing all this rubbish out.
Binning all their favourite foods.
Binning all their favourite foods, do you know? But, you know, I think it's been one of those things, because when you're so busy, you know, you're just kind of like, you just, just path of least resistance sometimes. Just eat anything. Right. You just eat anything. Just put it in. But now we're making bone broth. They're having bone broths every morning now, which they enormously hate. But I'm like, just a little bit every day. And, you know, I've already started to see, you know, Ella's got little eczema on her hands. That's starting to clear up. Do you know, all these little things, you know, which is a discussion we had with one of the other nutritionists that was on the show. She was like, don't cut things out. Just slowly introduce the good things, which has been really helpful. But in terms of things like, you know, just the practical application of sort of a low tox or, you know, more a healthy kind of unprocessed lifestyle, you know, what is your kind of general advice or school of thought around, you know, what kids should be having for breakfast and what they should be eating their lunchbox and then for dinner? What advice do you give to parents?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, every family is going to have, you know, different maybe dietary preferences. But, you know, actually one story I will share, my daughter's school does this really cool thing. She's just turned 5, and so this is, the whole school thing is a new thing for me, but they do something called brain food.
Yes.
So when they first get to school, and I don't know if this is something that gets done in every school, but for me, I was like, this is cool. So they sit on the mat, like they've just arrived at school, they sit on the mat and they have their brain food, like first thing in the morning. And this is like, you know, it's a piece of fruit, or, you know, it's vegetables. It's meant to be some, like, either a fruit or a vegetable. And I loved that, because I was like, this is teaching our kids, like, this is what their brains need to fuel properly. And so, yeah, I think, you know, lunch boxes, we definitely want to make sure that there's some protein and some fat in there for, you know, satiation for our kids. So they're not just, you know, running on sugar, because obviously, you know, those fast glucose fruits and fruits, you know, are great. Lots of fiber for it, antioxidants for our kids, but we want to give them something substantial as well. So, you know, looking at all the different, kind of covering all the different macronutrients in a lunchbox, and, you know, trying to do at least, you know, one or two different kinds of baking options during that week, something that's going to appeal to your child. So whether that's, you know, making some blueberry muffins. My kids love, like, pikelets. and they will, pikelets, like my daughter will have pikelets instead of a sandwich in her lunchbox, you know, multiple days a week. Like, she loves it. So remembering that children often don't like to sit down and eat their whole lunchbox, so having grab and go food is also, I've found, quite beneficial. So yeah, making sure that there's kind of something kind of crunchy that they're gonna, you know, have appeal. And I think also the more kind of variety that you offer, the better. But also, like, you know, you can't go past like a good wholemeal sandwich. Like, and a lot of people will be like, oh, you know, bread's bad. Honestly, it's tough as parents thinking about different things to pack lunch boxes, you know, wraps are great, you know, all those kinds of things. But yeah, it's a challenge to think about interesting things to put into lunchboxes every morning.
Well, do you know, I actually think it's really interesting because I think the brain food piece and the fruit that, you know, the, what do they call it, the fruit breaks and things, which, you know, they tend to do at that kindy to kind of, you know, year two, year three. And then I found that actually it all drops off a cliff from year three.
Interesting.
Like my son is year four now and my daughter, you know, Olive, she's in year six. And it's kind of like that education has stopped. And I now see this, this natural progression into more crappy processed foods. It's like they've already lost that that daily reminder. So I think there's a lot, because one of my questions that I was going to ask you was, you know, there's so many people doing good stuff, and there's still some people, you know, who either aren't equipped or educated, or, you know, to kind of introduce this, you know, good low tox kind of way of life. You know, how do we change that? You know, I mean, education at a primary school is so important. I still remember Healthy Harold, but whether I apply it, I'm not so sure. But, you know, I think there's still more that we need to do for the generations coming behind us in terms of giving them what we know it. You know, at our age, if we can pass it on at a younger age. I mean, your children are living and breathing it from day one, but there's a lot of children that aren't. So, you know, where can we make that critical change so we can really improve our overall health for generations?
So true. And I mean, like, ideally, we want this stuff starting to be taught in schools, like, because, you know, the kids are at that age where, you know, like an idea is given to them that they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, you know, and that they'll just accept it. And then they will likely go home and, you know, teach their parents about maybe we shouldn't be spraying this stuff around the house, you know. But I guess, like, it does also fall back to the parents. Like, we are the ones that are the gatekeepers for our homes, and we have a responsibility, you know, to not bury our head in the sand about you know, all of this stuff. When we hear these kind of headlines come out, there's so much information on Google, and to the point where it can sometimes become a bit overwhelming. But yeah, not letting that deter you from digging into it, you know, finding people to maybe follow on social media. I will say social media for me has been, it's obviously where I educate, and it's where, you know, I hang out a lot. But when I was first brand new to this idea of low tox living, it was where I hung out to be inspired. Mm-hmm. I started following accounts that were teaching this stuff completely free with no agenda, just wanting to get this information out to families and see families thrive. So I feel like, you know, if you are at that point where you're like, maybe I should look more into this, just curate your feed, like, start, you know, following a few people that are talking about this and teaching about its importance. And yeah, realize that, like, no one wants to overwhelm you or scare you or anything like that. And, you know, if you are feeling that vibe from an account, just unfollow. That's not great for your mental health either. But find people who are level-headed around it, who are educating about the importance of living, you know, making easy, sustainable swaps that are not going to stress you out. And yeah, because there's so many people doing stuff completely free online, if you know kind of who to follow. And
Well, and presumably one of the hot topics that you probably get around this time of the year is around colds and flus, because I already see them with my kids starting to get the sniffles again, which, interestingly, having just spent the last couple of months feeding them better and the bone broth and thing, I don't see it as much. But you know, what is with your, obviously, your a wellness hat on and your nursing hat on as well. You know, what are those?
Yeah.
What are your advice to parents right now to kind of try and ward off those expected cold and flu incidences that invariably happen around this time of the year?
So true. And like, I'm seeing a lot of kind of parental anxiety around this as well, particularly, you know, moving through to winter. And so, you know, I talk to mums every single day about, you know, their feelings around illness and their kids. So I guess, you know, my advice would be focusing on, you know, like what you've been doing, serving that nutrient dense food. Also thinking about the other things that boost immunity. So helping your child stay active, like, you know, in winter months, this is definitely harder than it is in summertime, but, you know, making sure that they're still staying active, getting enough sunshine. So, you know, if the weather really has packed up, possibly supplementing with a bit of vitamin D, but, you know, even through an overcast day, making sure your kids are outside, getting some of that, that vitamin D. Quality sleep. Sleep is a big one for our immune system. So ensuring that, you know, your littles are not staying up too late, that they're really getting the sleep they need to restore. Because all of these things we know strengthen that immune response. But for me, I believe having natural tools in the home for handling illness is another really important part of kind of lowering that parental anxiety around illness. And, you know, that's what obviously I help, you know, mamas with my business, the tools and the education to actually feel confident in their homes.
And what are those tools? So if your little one does get sick, cold, flu, kind of tonsillitis, whatever the usual kind of the things are, what are the best tips for treating that? Obviously trying to avoid, you know, I'm a big advocate for trying to avoid antibiotics even where possible.
Yeah,
but
that's it.
What's your advice if your little one is sick over the winter months?
Yeah. So, I mean, big one is rest. Like, you've got to, you know, allow that child, you know, the extra hours that they need to rest. That's a big one. If baby is still, you know, breastfeeding, then, you know, keeping on feeding, because we know that with breast milk, it's an incredible kind of feedback mechanism, which you, I'm sure, know all about. But for our listeners, you know, when a child is unwell, when the saliva is taken into the breast, the mother's body actually recognizes that kind of illness, basically, in a very easy to understand way. And actually the mother will produce antibodies specific for that particular illness. So keeping on feeding, and hydration is important. So, you know, if you're not feeding, you know, you're using, you know, formula, hydration. So keeping on hydration. And elevating the head of the bed can help. So, you know, if your little one is, you know, completely congested, even just 10 to 15 degrees, the head of the cot or the bed, like a blanket under there, that can be really helpful, particularly for nighttime, you know, sleeping. Saline drops can be really effective before feeds, for, you know, giving the bottle. And for me, like, I love using essential oils in a diffuser for congestion and for helping that sleep that the little ones need. Also thinking about immune supporting supplements. So vitamin C, a big one, everyone pretty much knows, you know, try and get that vitamin C. But also things like zinc. So zinc, vitamin D, echinacea and elderberry can be really supportive as well. I love the brand Haka Herbals, and I'm pretty sure you can get that in Australia as well. Those are great for over ones. Just a really easy, taste good way to kind of nourish their immune system whilst they're fighting the virus.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing all of these down. Because I'm sure there's more on their way. I've dodged a few over the last couple of weeks, but I'm sure they're coming. So then I suppose my question, a bit of a shotgun round in terms of questions, and jump around a little bit, just on the sleep. How many hours of sleep should children have a night?
Yeah, so obviously it's going to depend on the age of the child. So, you know, a normal, like a two-year-old now, you know, a two-year-old should still be getting 11 to 12 hours of sleep a night, ideally. Doesn't all obviously have to be in one stretch. Ideally, you would love it to be, but mine is not. So yeah, very much depends. And it's interesting because, you know, in those teenage years, like, often, you know, we'll start with, 16 hours, you know, and then go down. And then, you know, like your 6 or 7 year old might be getting, you know, 10-ish hours. And then the teenage years, often it will start creeping up to the number of hours that they would like to have again. But yeah, very much based on the age of the child. But yeah, I mean, earlier to bed is best. not just so that us as mamas can have a break at the end of the day, but also it really helps with daytime waking and energy levels throughout the day, working on that circadian rhythm. So, you know, as soon as it gets dark, there are, you know, chemicals in our brains that are telling us to unwind. And often if we let our kids stay up too much later, they can get a bit of a second wind, as I'm sure a lot of
people we've seen. About.
And then you've missed the golden window.
Yes, the window.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because we have our youngest, she's, what, five, and you know, she was going to bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock there for a bit. And I was saying to my partner, we can't do this. This is, you know, she should be in bed at 7:30. So slowly introduced that's taken her the better part of, 6 to 8 months for her to change that circadian rhythm. But the difference in the child is phenomenal.
So encouraging.
Yeah, I tend to have this discussion with lots of mums about how much sleep a child's getting. And they're all like, oh, it's only 8 hours. I'm like, no. It's actually significantly more for a child. But anyway, that's why I wanted to ask you about that one.
Yeah, so good.
Second one, sunscreen. Even though we're going into winter, seems sort of like wrong time to ask you the question. But sunscreen, what's your take on sunscreen for kids? Because I am a kind of crazy about sunscreen because my son got so burnt at one point. It was, you know, horrific, not my doing. But, you know, I'm now like sunscreen. But I am conscious that also full of crap. So what are your thoughts? And if they are necessary, which ones should we be using?
Yeah. So there are definitely some awesome Aussie and New Zealand brands out there doing some really clean sunscreens. I guess my personal choice is to go away from the chemical sunscreens to a mineral sunscreen. So there's two different kinds of sunscreens. One creates like a chemical kind of barrier on the skin, and one does a chemical kind of reaction within the skin. So I look for the kind of barrier kind of creams, and those are going to have things like zinc oxide in it. So you're creating a barrier on the skin versus having that chemical reaction within the skin. And you want to be looking for minimal ingredients, not too much kind of synthetic fragrance. Yes, you know, a lot of parents love the smell of, you know, beautiful coconut on their children, but we want to be looking at, you know, the least amount of kind of synthetic kind of chemicals on the skin as well. And you can get some, they are often a little bit more white than your chemical sunscreens, the mineral ones, but you can get some really good ones even from the supermarket that are, there's one that you may know that you might have seen over in the Australian supermarkets called Ethical Zinc. That's a good clean supermarket brand. But all of your Banana Boat, all of those kinds of ones, we want to be avoiding, because there's often recall headlines. Even last summer in Australia, I saw quite a few around, you know, contaminants with something called benzene, which is a known carcinogen in a lot of those sunscreens. So I think, you know, just to decrease the risk, you know, use your sunscreen, just make sure it's a good one. I've actually got to post a safe sunscreen guide on my Instagram account. If you want to come over and say hi, I can tag you in it so you can see, you know, some good options, and they don't have to break the bank at all. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the irony, isn't it? Because your Banana Boats ones, which I avoid because I am pretty certain just by kind of anecdotally using that stuff, my kids end up more burnt than they did without it anyway. I avoid that one with good cause. So presumably then the spray ones are really bad as well then, aren't they, in the can?
I haven't found any reliable spray ones that are, yeah, I mean, easy to put on. Obviously the application is appealing for adults, but yeah, I stick to the tube or the roll-on ones. But I mean, when it comes to sun exposure, like, the ultimate goal is to keep our kids covered. Like, I mean, sunscreen on places that aren't exposed to the sun, but we want to be using rash shirts. We want to be in the shade when we can. Like, it's about being sensible about being in the sun and not letting our kids spend, you know, 3 hours in direct sun, you know, and with uncovered skin, you know, because our New Zealand and Aussie sun is no joke. It really isn't. Lots of other places in the world you can get away with it, but not over here. Being aware of that.
Yeah, and I suppose the thing is, on the flip of that, is that sun is actually important to us at the right time, you know, in the morning, getting out and getting that lovely sun without there being lots of the UV, so you get burnt.
Correct.
So, Yeah, I always
picking your sun hours. Yeah.
Yeah, I always still think one of the most fascinating things I ever worked on was with multiple sclerosis years ago, and we were doing a research thing, this longitudinal study, and it was around the fact that the incidence of MS increased significantly at the introduction of the Slip, Slop, Slap campaign in the 80s.
Wow.
Huge. So the drop in vitamin D was contributing to this high incidence of, wow, of MS. So
yep.
I'm always the ones that get out the kids in the morning, and then I turn into a bit of a psycho come kind of 11 o'clock. Like, get the sunscreen on. Yeah. But why didn't we? You didn't have to wear it before. I'm like, yeah, that was the good sun.
Oh, I know.
But Nikki, listen, I have so thoroughly enjoyed today, and I feel like we could continue on, and we might have to pick this up as a 2.0 later on down the track. But I suppose I wanted to just, as we wrap up, just to ask you, you know, that final, probably obvious question, which is, in your mind, what are the three top tips that you'd give to any parent who was looking to embrace a low-tox lifestyle?
Yeah, so good. So I guess I've already kind of covered this multiple times in our talk today, but I find a community. So mm-hmm. find people who are doing what you want to be doing, who are going to do it alongside you, right? So often, you know, when you're making this choice about changing your home to go lower tox, you can feel alone, right? So maybe you're the only one in your friendship groups who kind of is on this page. So I think, you know, finding other mamas who are doing this and showing you what's possible, really, really important. Now, obviously, I have one of those communities, so come on over, hang out with me. But also, number two would be start small, right? So switch as you run out of things. Do not break the bank in trying this endeavor. Make changes that are within your budget so that it is sustainable. And I guess number three would be celebrate the wins, right? So run your own race and don't compare your journey with anyone else's.
Really good advice. Really good advice. And to your point about come over and join me, where should people come and join you? Where's the best place to get more information about low-tox lifestyle?
The place that I hang out the most is Instagram. So come and follow me. I'm Nourished and Vibrant over there. Just search that. I'm sure I will pop up there and come and say hey and just, yeah, get to watch a few reels and see what I'm all about. But I'd love to connect with you over there.
Fantastic. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us today, Nikki. It's been so fabulous. And for everyone listening, I hope you've, if anything like me, you've learned a whole lot and inspired me to get started on this journey in earnest. So Nikki, thanks so much again. And as Nikki said, if you're looking for a community or a start of a community, please go to Instagram and join her there. And as always, this podcast will be available on your favorite podcasting platform. And thank you again, everybody. And we look forward to seeing and hearing from you again soon. Thanks again. Yeah.